Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Stellus Capital Investment Corporation Year-End 2020 Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. The call will be open for a question-and-answer session following the speaker's remarks. Please note this conference is being recorded today, Friday, March 5th, 2021. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Robert Ladd, Chief Executive Officer of Stellus Capital Investment Corporation. Mr. Ladd, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Holly. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the call. Welcome to our conference call covering the quarter and year ended December 31st, 2020. Joining me this morning is Todd Huskinson, our Chief Financial Officer, who will cover important information about forward-looking statements and then also cover an overview of our financial information.
Thank you, Rob. I'd like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded. Please note that this call is the property of Stellus Capital Investment Corporation, and that any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by using a telephone number and PIN provided in our press release announcing this call. I'd also like to call your attention to the customary safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information. Today's conference call may also include forward-looking statements and projections, and we ask that you refer to our most recent filing with the SEC for important factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We will not update our forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our website at www.stelluscapital.com under the Public Investors link or call us at 713-292-5400. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to our Chief Executive Officer, Rob Ladd.
Thank you, Todd. The past year has certainly been a challenging one for everyone. We're thankful that the members of our firm have remained healthy and that we've been able to operate remotely without interruption. Our portfolio has performed well throughout the unprecedented pandemic, and we've been able to significantly improve our liquidity and available capital position. In addition, our net asset value has risen back above $14 per share. For 2021, we've seen an increase in investment opportunities and, as a result, have funded $58 million on a cost basis thus far in the first quarter. So since year-end, our portfolio has increased by $43 million net of payoffs. We'll begin by discussing our operating results, followed by a review of the portfolio, including asset quality, and then the outlook. And Todd will cover our operating results now.
Thank you, Rob. For fiscal year 2020, we covered our dividend $14.14 to $14.03. Turning to the fourth quarter, our distributions of $0.25 per share, which were declared in the third quarter, were covered through net investment income of $0.26 per share and core net investment income of $0.28 per share. Net asset value per share increased $0.86 during the quarter from $13.17 to $14.03 due to the early declaration of the fourth quarter dividend and net appreciation on our investment portfolio. We recorded a net realized loss of $7.7 million, primarily related to one investment, which was offset by unrealized gains during the quarter of $19.6 million, due primarily to the reversal of previously recorded unrealized losses on the debt portfolio and unrealized gains in our equity portfolio. Over the last 9 months, we've taken a number of steps to improve our liquidity and capital position. During 2020, we increased our bank facility by $10 million to $230 million, amended the covenants to increase our maximum regulatory leverage to  1.5x net asset value, and extended the maturity to September 2025. In January 2021, we completed an institutional bond offering of $100 million of notes due in March 2026 at a fixed rate of 4.875%. We used the proceeds to redeem our $48.9 million of notes in 2022, the remainder to pay down our bank facility. We actively worked during the year to decrease our unfunded commitments from $37.5 million at the beginning of the year to $24.2 million today. Finally, we've continued to commit and fund equity capital to our second SBIC subsidiary, which allows us to draw low-cost 10-year debentures on a 2-to-1 basis. With that, I'll turn it back over to Rob.
Thank you, Todd. I'd now like to cover the following areas: a life-to-date review, portfolio and asset quality, and then turn to outlook. Relative to life to date, so since our IPO in November 2012, we've invested approximately $1.7 billion in over 130 companies and received approximately $983 million of repayments while maintaining stable asset quality. Life to date, we paid over $161 million of dividends to our investors, which represents $11 per share to an investor in our IPO, at November of 2012. Relative to our portfolio and asset quality, we ended the year with an investment portfolio at fair value of $653 million across 66 portfolio companies. This was up $629 million, up from $629 million across 63 companies back a year ago in December 31st of 19. During 2020, we invested $152 million in 10 new and 20 existing portfolio companies and received $129 million of repayments. So our net portfolio growth at cost was about $23 million for the year. Our portfolio companies continue to be weighted towards secured lending at floating rates. Therefore, at December 31st, 97% of our loans were secured and 93% were priced at floating rates. This move has coincided with greater first lien and tranche lending. We continue to maintain good diversification with the largest industry sector at 17% of the total. Our average investment per company is about $10 million, and our largest investment is $21.6 million, both numbers measured at fair value. And of the 66 portfolio companies, 62 are backed by private equity firms. Overall, our asset quality is stable at a 2.0 on our investment rating system or on plan. 13% of our portfolio is rated a 1 or ahead of plan, and approximately 11% of the portfolio is marked at an investment grade of 3 or below. And then relative to non-accruals, we have 3 loans on non-accrual, which comprise 1% at fair value of the total loan portfolio. Now turning to outlook. So as I've said in the past, part of our strategy has been to invest in the equity of our portfolio companies in a modest way, but unable to generate realized gains sufficient to offset losses over time. As our business has matured over the last 7 to 8 years, we began to see somewhat regular realized gains from our portfolio. During 2019, we generated $19.6 million of net realized gains, and those gains were helpful in offsetting approximately $10 million of realized losses during 2020. Like today, we've generated net realized gains of $8.4 million. Beginning in the fourth quarter, we began to see a significant increase in our actionable pipeline. As I mentioned previously, since year-end, we funded $58 million at cost in 4 new portfolio companies and received 1 repayment of $14.8 million. We've identified likely fundings of approximately $28 million for the balance of this quarter, so therefore in the month of March, and are aware of approximately $25 million of potential repayments over the next 30 to 60 days. With that, I'll open it up for questions. Thank you. Holly, you may begin the Q&A session, please.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And our first question today will come from Christopher Nolan with Ladenburg Thalmann.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, good morning.
I guess, Todd, Kidcraft, as I recall, that was a non-accrual last quarter and still longer there. Is that a fair read of it? So it's back on accrual?
Well, we've got a preferred equity position in it that's been written up, but Rob, you may want to address it more fully than that.
Yeah, so Chris, the two things have happened. There's a note for about $1.5 million and an equity preferred equity position for 4. The equity position was written up based on really outstanding performance since this summer, and the loan amount was put on accrual. So it has gone on accrual.
Okay. A second question is more strategic. Congratulations on the investment grade offering, but given the coupon is so low, and given the risk of inflation coming back, and given that you guys have relatively low leverage ratios, is there a temptation to actually put on more investment grade debt and use the revolver less going forward? And that's it for me. Thank you.
Yeah, so good question, Chris. So on our revolver, we borrow at the margin at 2.75%. And think about the fees associated with it have already been paid. So that's the marginal cost. And the bond offering, which was attractive at 4 7/8 and includes some sales load, is a little over 5% all-in cost. So additional bonds, you know, certainly are more expensive than the bank facility. We think we've got the right mix currently in terms of both fixed rate and floating rate liability structure. But having said that, if we saw bond yields come down even more from the 4 7/8, we might look at that in a modest way.
Great. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. And our next question will come from Robert Dodd with Raymond James.
Hi, guys, and yeah, congrats on the quarter and getting NAV back over 14. On the pipeline, Rob, I mean, you say you're seeing, you know, increased opportunities. You've funded a lot already. How many of those opportunities that look like they could close this quarter were came to your attention, so to speak, in Q4? I mean, is the pipeline continuing to refill in Q1, or is this kind of spillover from Q4?
Yes, so Robert, I'd say that it's a, you know, pretty constant pipeline, and I'd say if something's closing, say the first week in March, we would have likely seen it in November or December, or perhaps as, you know, late as January. So there's a gestation period here. So, but again, we're seeing lots of interesting opportunities. And one thing, so we would expect this to continue. And there's probably some pent-up demand from an M&A perspective, certainly coming out of COVID. And that also, interestingly, historically about half of what we looked at was SBIC qualifying. And if it's helpful, over the last, in the fourth quarter and including what we're doing this quarter, roughly 80% of what we're closing is SBIC qualifying. So this is very helpful because of our second license.
That is very helpful, and the SBIC has a pretty attractive cost of capital as well. I know. So, I mean, what about, just to kind of flip, you gave us some color on repayments over the next 30, 60 days, possible repayments. And they are very hard to predict. But can you give us any on kind of how you feel that may flow through the course of the year? Do you expect it to be a high repayment year? And then obviously that would balance with, if you're seeing a lot of opportunities, you know, that those two offset. But you know, give us any color on there. And I guess what I'm getting at is, over the course of the year, do you expect the portfolio to grow or bounce around a little bit and come out even, say?
So again, hard to predict the future, but our goal this year, after the fundings of this quarter, we finished out the month we're in, we would expect our portfolio to be roughly $700 million, and our goal this year is to get that to $800 million by the end of the year. So we would expect additional investments net of repayments will probably grow the portfolio close to $100 million this year, and a lot of that will come in SBIC financings.
Got it. I appreciate that. So this is a good goal. The last kind of on this theme, the quality of the deals you're seeing. I mean, obviously, you know, secured unitranche, etc. But I mean, is leverage starting to rise in those deals? Is a structure starting to weaken, or how's that going? Given the amount of kind of pent up M&A that's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think, you know, the good news is that first, almost everything we're looking at is first lien unitranche. Occasionally, we see an interesting second lien, so you may see us, so, you know, one or two of those might come forward, but most everything we're doing now is in this first lien unitranche. The leverage quotients have stayed the same, and you know, that leverage is as low as 3 times. We looked at something this morning that was under 3 times, and then, you know, as high as, you know, high 4s, but on average around 4 times EBITDA multiple. So leverage has not changed. And then the same structures we've always had, equity checks approximate 45 to 50% of the capital structure. And if the business is being purchased for, let's say, 12 or 13 times, that the leverage quotient hasn't changed, but that equity component is much higher. So again, it could be in a very expensive business, it's a purchase for 12 or 13 times, our leverage might be 4, and the delta is being covered by equity, so a much larger percentage of the capital structure. And then we continue to have serious covenants in all the lending we do, and so good news in our market, that's not changed, and we don't expect it to change.
I appreciate all that color, and good luck for the rest of the year. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you. And next we'll hear from Ryan Lynch with KBW.
Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions, and really nice quarter, guys. My question I had was, of the roughly $20 million of unrealized gains that you guys recorded this quarter, can you give us a ballpark breakdown of what percentage of that was driven by, you know, recovery of previously recorded unrealized losses on debt investments versus upside that you recorded and unrealized gains in your equity portfolio?
Yeah, Ryan, it's Todd. I'll cover that. So of the about $19 million of unrealized gains, roughly $10 million of it was related to reversal of unrealized losses previously for primarily related to FFO. So, you know, with that realization, we had about a $2 million pickup from that, and then the remainder of it is the debt was up a little bit, you know, with respect to with spreads generally, and then the rest of it, the majority of it, was in our equity portfolio, where we had one investment made up about half of that, and then the rest, I would say, most of them were under $1 million, but just kind of across the board in the equity portfolio, they were written up.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I might add to that, Ryan. So it's some spread impact on our model, but more company specific in terms of either equity appreciation or realization, as Todd said, like for FFO, which was sold in November.
Okay, understood. And then maybe kind of a higher level question, you know, as you all, you know, over the last several years, kind of prior to COVID, I think you were all well aware of how far back the last credit cycle was. And I think we're investing, you know, as such of a potential credit cycle coming. You know, now that 2020 happened, we've gone through a credit cycle. It seems like the economy is now on a little bit of an upswing. You know, as the economy gradually recovers and reopens, does your investment philosophy change at all of how you approach the market in 2018, 2019 versus how you're approaching it in 2021 in terms of either targeted sectors you guys are focusing on or just where you're willing to go in the capital structure?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd say that our investment philosophy or approach has really not changed. And the reason I'd say that is that the characteristics we're looking for in companies is very similar today as it would have been in the best of times. And one of those that we're looking for is, can this business and can this sector survive a downturn, a recession? So that's our initial underwriting screen is, can the company survive a recession? And so as an example, we'd be looking for a business that has low maintenance capital expenditures and can change their cost structure quickly in response. And we saw that in a number of the businesses at the outset of COVID last year. And then, of course, as things came back, they were able to ramp up the other way. So I'd say very open-minded to sectors and approach, but if it's helpful, there are a lot of characteristics we look for, but I'd start with how does this business do during a downturn?
Okay, understood. You know, kind of on that note, it is interesting, though, if the investment philosophy, you know, at the core really hasn't changed. What's really the driving force behind, you know, so many more of your investments today being eligible for the SBIC versus in the past?
Yeah, so I'd say it's somewhat of a natural flow. So if you know, we operate a national business and are active with, you know, as many as 100 sponsors and maybe at one time 50 or so. So all over the sponsors are all over the country, and the companies they invest in are all over the country and in all kinds of sectors and, frankly, in all kinds of sizes, other than if it gets too large, we're probably not a good fit. So that natural flow that we see throughout the year currently is producing more in the SBIC qualifying way. So I'd like to say we targeted it, but it's more naturally coming out of the flow we're seeing. Now, implied in a SBIC qualifying investment is as a kind of a nominal basis. It would have a lower than a higher EBITDA level, but we're still seeing the EBITDA levels in the area that we'd like to see them in. So anyway, it's, that natural flow is helpful, and when you see a lot of opportunities, and I'd say if it's also helpful if we're looking at something that's SBIC qualifying or not, you know, our cost of capital for SBIC financing. So we might be more geared to that, but a broad opportunity set, and fortunately, it's more skewed to that level today. One other thing I'd say that we also look in for in businesses is that a real growth profile, which is true of like lower middle market private equity generally. And so these higher growth companies with low maintenance capital expenditures, if you will, if they perform and meet their plan, they will have delevered in both an absolute and relative way in a couple of years and will be refinanced out. So that's another one of the ingredients we look for in the financings we do.
Okay, that's really helpful background and color on that market. Those are all my questions today. I really appreciate the time and really nice quarter, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. And at this time, we have no further questions in our queue. I'll turn the conference back over to our speakers for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, nothing more here. We very much appreciate everyone's support, and we'll be back with you in early May to report on the first quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this concludes today's call. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.